Hello everyone, it's Dr. Joan Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and today is July the 8th, 2021. So welcome here, welcome to summer, and I know the Olympics are coming very close, and so wanted to talk about the Olympics in Tokyo 2021. Of course, it was canceled last year, postponed because of the pandemic. And so it's actually going to happen this year, very soon, starting July 23rd. So wanted to talk about that. And then we'll do a part one today and a part two on the fourth Thursday of the month, which is, I think that will actually be on July the 22nd. Our next call will be the day before the Olympics start. So yeah, I just want to talk about many of the aspects, the mental training part of the Olympics, and how you, it may be, you know, of course it might be a little late right now to get involved with Olympians for this Olympics, but you never know. There's still many Olympians out there that need your help, and also you can be thinking about these techniques that I'll be presenting for future Olympians for the next Olympics, and also for just high-level training for, you know, after the Olympics, the World Championships usually take place in many sports, and also national championships that next year. So there's always top-level competitions going on. So, yeah, I wanted to talk about the value of working with top athletes and Olympians, professionals for your business, for your coaching business, as a performing edge coach and sports psychology coach, and how timing is important for things, and what's unique about these Olympic Games. Of course, we've got the pandemic, which is very unique and totally different than anything we've experienced before. And so we'll talk about that and how to bring your coaching to a higher level. This, you know, working with top athletes can help bring your coaching to a higher level. You can work with all levels of athletes, of course, but just talk about, since the Olympics are here, talk about what that's like. As I worked with Olympians at the last seven Olympic Games now, personally, and so I just wanted to talk about my experience with that and how you can have those same kinds of experiences to raise your credibility, so athletes, elite athletes, want to work with you, and talk about how you can raise your credibility. So other topics we wanted to talk about are how to find Olympic athletes to work with and mistakes to avoid when approaching them, and what to do instead and when you're working with them, and my strategies for sort of getting in the door, and how to do your research before talking with your the athletes you want to approach, and also, you know, having that first conversation, what to say, what not to say, you know, the tone of your voice, all of that makes a difference, how to come across very professionally. And also, you know, we can talk about overcoming your fears, working with elite athletes, because they can detect, you know, fear and anxiety too, but how to just treat them just like any other human being. They have the same emotions, the same challenges that are going on. And then just talk about do's and don'ts when working with Olympians, and how to keep your high-level athletes coming back to work with you. And, you know, when and where to get, you know, powerful Olympian testimonials. There's a certain way to do that, and certain do's and don'ts about testimonials that we'll talk about here. And so just so much to talk about in this session and our next one, our next couple as well, because the Olympics are the 23rd, and then it'll be going on for a couple weeks. So, yeah, we'll have a lot to talk about there. So put down July 22nd for our next call as well. That'll be the day before the Olympics start in Tokyo. So, and then talk about ethics and working with high-level athletes too. So those are some things I wanted to, some topics we'll talk about. So, yeah, let's get into our material here. And I know I want to welcome all of you that are on the call. I know several of you are muted, as you said, you're traveling or there's background noise. So, yeah, that's great. And if you want to jump in and ask a question, feel free to. You can press star 6 on your phone to unmute and star 6 again to mute yourself. And then also you can email me any questions you have, too, for this time or for next time. So, as I mentioned, I've worked with athletes in the last 7 Olympic Games, both summer and winter games, and worked with them in many ways, many capacities, mainly as an outside consultant to them, or sports psychologist, and coach for them that way. There are, you know, of course, sports psychologists that are hired by teams and Olympic teams, and those are select positions that usually only requires you being a clinical psychologist to get. And oftentimes those positions, I think, are there maybe they might be considered prestigious, but I think they're not necessarily that helpful in that, you know, oftentimes there's confidentialities that are breached, and when athletes working with a whole group like that, they may tend to, you know, athletes don't feel that comfortable talking one-on-one with the person because they know that all the other athletes are, they're involved with them too, and they are worried about privacy issues. Whereas if you're working as an outside consultant, just working with one athlete and not the whole team, like I have done for many years, then I think it's often better because you're in a position where you can just talk with that one athlete and you can assure them, they can be assured that you're not going to be talking with anyone else about their issues, and you're not involved with the team, you're not involved with their sponsors or their agents or their coaches. That it's just you and that person, and so they feel often very comfortable with you that way. My athletes have felt very comfortable with me because I can reassure them that I'm, an outside consultant, separate from all the other things that they are doing. So, you know, for instance, when I was at working at the Olympics with a top pole vaulter in Greece, in Athens, Greece, you know, at the 2004 Olympics, I was able to go get a credential and go inside the Olympic training center there and work with her to watch her training and for two weeks before the Olympics and prepare. And I could look at the kind of workouts she was doing with her coach and hear the interactions with her coach, you know, all with her permission to let me be there. And then right after her workout, we would sit down and talk and be able to debrief how that workout went and how she's feeling about the, the upcoming Olympics and the pressure, since she was the favorite to win, and there's a lot of pressures there. So, you know, and yet she had an injury that was developing. So there were a lot of things going on that she wanted to talk about. And sometimes athletes are reluctant to talk with their own athletic coaches about all of that, about their feelings, about their and maybe about their injuries, but they feel comfortable talking with you because you're their sports psychology coach, their mental training consultant that they feel comfortable with. So I think we're all in a very special position, a wonderful position to really help athletes with their overall character and their overall how they're feeling as a person, their humanness, and to help so that they can really have somebody they can vent to. So, I've worked with on site at the 2004 Olympics in Greece, also at the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver, the Winter Olympics there, worked with two athletes, aerial skier and a luge athletes, and then worked with the 2012 Olympics on site there in London with track runners. So and then the other Olympics I've worked remotely, even if you can't attend the Olympics, which is, can get really complicated, very expensive to go to the Olympics usually, and almost impossible to find a place to stay. So if you have a friend that lives there, a friend of a friend that can, you know, where you can stay with them, have private housing, that's the absolute best way. And that's what I was able to do each of the times I went to the Olympics. I was really grateful for that opportunity. And so I would encourage you to look for that. But it's okay, perfectly fine and very effective to work with someone remotely, just talking by phone or Zoom. You know, before the Olympics and the weeks and months leading up to it, and then during the Olympics as well. I mean, when a track athlete was texting me during, you know, right before her finals, she's there just saying, I'm really nervous right now. And so I gave her some tips to remember what we had talked about and a few cues to remember. And just that simple texting with her right before her finals really made all the difference, she said. So that kind of thing makes a huge difference, just any way that you can communicate with them. So, you know, as the athletes now finalize their preparations for the upcoming Olympic Games in Tokyo, in Japan, mental training is an important part, really important part, providing them with a competitive edge. And so it's, you know, you're doing behind-the-scenes team preparation or individual preparation, preparing those athletes with mental skills that I think prove as valuable as their physical skills in achieving their personal performances, especially when most of the time they're far away from home. They're in a completely different country, perhaps, you know, non-English-speaking and very foreign circumstances, and of course during the pandemic right now that's foreign to everyone and very different kind of circumstances than athletes are used to, and we'll get into that also here. But just the Olympic pressure really exposes any weakness in your mental game. I think that's really important to realize, and there's certain aspects of the Olympics in particular, that athletes never see in other competitions. Of course, you know, because it may be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and other times they're competing on a weekly basis in regular competitions. But here you've got something that's, you know, for most athletes, it's once every 4 years. And even if an athlete competes in the one Olympics and does well and then competes in another one, they're often a very different person 4 years later. And so preparing for the Olympic Games is really customized work that you can do of planning and active mental challenges, what they need to prepare for that Olympic pressure, and they're anticipating being able to trust in their plan. And so you, as a performing edge coach, you can help athletes execute all these tasks in the months and years leading up to the game. So you might think about this in terms of the next Olympic Games too. And I'm working with athletes right now who've made the Olympic team and are moving toward the Olympics in Tokyo. And so I'll be sharing some of my experiences with you for that as well as we move forward here or in our next call. So there's also likely to be location-specific mental challenges for the athletes, you know, going to Tokyo. They're competing far away from home. And whereas the athletes in Japan, the Japanese athletes will have the home field advantage versus and they have the home field pressure there. And so, and then there's weather, they might need to make changes of variable weather, delays, certain events. That happens more in, of course, the Winter Olympics, but that's something to be aware of, where the athlete is from and what the location is like there. And so there's a number of issues that athletes might face both on and off their racing or their field or their court or wherever they are competing, you know, there might be Olympic performance issues that have to be dealt with specifically right away. You know, for instance, at the 2010 Vancouver Olympics, I was there. The luge athlete I was working with, he was on the top of the slopes. They were training ahead of time, you know, on the course there. In the luge, as you know, it's a tiny little sled. They're going 90 miles an hour, very unprotected down this slope, and it's just incredibly fast. Turns out the course was much faster than they'd planned on. And my athlete was the next athlete to go to on his training run down on a luge, and then suddenly, you know, the athlete in front went off the course and ran into a pole and actually died. You probably read about that. It was national in international news for several weeks. It was a Russian athlete that died. And my athlete, you know, it's on the video there. Everyone was watching, and he witnessed that. So, I mean, it's very traumatic seeing that happen. Here's on a course doing an event that you are going to do, and everyone's saying, wow, that could happen to me. So that was a situation that had to be dealt with immediately, as we're talking about, and I talked with him and was able to work with him on that issue. I mean, this is like crisis intervention right there. And so we were able to, what they did is close down the course, and they said, okay, obviously we're not going to continue this training. Someone just died here, and they were all going to, everyone get on the bus and go to the opening ceremonies, where that night, imagine going through the opening ceremonies after just witnessing one of your teammates or someone you know. All the guys in the luge are really close to each other, they're like family, because they know it's a very small, very intimate, close group of athletes that become friends. Not like some of the other sports where there's so many athletes. So, he had to, you know, go through opening ceremonies, and then the next day the luge was the first event. So here he's having to suddenly now going to go to compete after he's just seen someone die in his own sport right in front of his eyes, and very difficult situation. What they did was they lowered the start, made it lower down on the hill so the course wouldn't be quite as fast. They changed all the starting signals. They changed everything. So everything he had practiced, we had to throw out the window. And well, we talked about it, and I was able to work with him on being able to realize, just be grateful for being here. It was his fourth Olympics, and he didn't intend on winning. He just wanted to compete and was happy to be able to compete there. So he was able to, and we talked about, you know, when you've got a lot of emotions like that, but it's showtime, it's important to have a way to put those emotions temporarily, to put them on hold, like put them into a filing cabinet, and say, okay, these are important. These are important to deal with, but it's right now. It's showtime, and it's let's put them on hold for now, and then we'll work with those feelings afterward. And so he was able to do that, and was able to complete the run and compete in his fourth Olympics. So that was a situation where it's almost like emergency sports psychology. And you just never know what's going to happen. But you can be the person that can really intervene and do whatever it takes to help your athlete through difficult situations. So there's many situations, as I say, that an athlete might face both on and off the court or on and off a racing course. And or on and off a field, and you know, it could be returning to action after an injury or a small injury. I have examples of that as well, and it could be distractions from life issues outside of the sport, like a family member, you know, who's sick, maybe from COVID-19, or needs help. Could be lots of or things going on, you know, with relationships that's also the athlete has to deal with and that you can help with. It could be also the handling the pressure of being the favorite, like my the pole vaulter I was working with at the 2004 Athens Olympics. And so there can be so many issues where you can really help. And so just, and I, as I mentioned, you can, if you're working with athletes now toward the Tokyo Olympics, that's great. But also these tips I'm giving you can apply to the next Olympics and the World Championships and National Championships and any major competition where you're working with someone. So those are some things I wanted to highlight here about the Olympics. And now specifically talking about the mental health of Olympians in this COVID-19 pandemic in Tokyo, you know, is makes this Olympics very special, and I think makes it more relevant, even makes our work more relevant than ever as sports psychology coaches. Because the pandemic has dominated discussions, of course, around the Tokyo Olympics, and we didn't even know until recently if they were going to happen again after being postponed last year. But the mental health, mental well-being of athletes is also a health concern for athletes going there. And for in addition to the pressure of, you know, competition, this summer, you know, just making the team, there's, you know, measures at reducing the spread of the virus means athletes might have little opportunity to blow off steam. They just, you know, train and compete, and they might not, you know, they haven't been able to go party or go out and have a beer with friends or do a lot of that. And when they go to Tokyo, human interactions are going to be discouraged, and competitors will be requested not to visit places other than the venues, the training centers, and their accommodation. It's just kind of go train, compete, and then go back to your accommodations, the Olympic Village. So it's not, you know, there's no place to really have fun. I know when I was at the Olympic Training Center at Athens, 2004, I was able to go there and, you know, to get in just with special permission from my athlete to see her there. And once you got inside, boy, there was all kinds of, there was a pool, just for a special pool just for athletes to relax in. And there was all kinds of fun things to do, nice dining hall. And it was just really a nice place to be able to relax and to hang out with other athletes. And this Olympics, of course, will be very different with Tokyo and lots of restrictions. The Olympic Village in Tokyo, where many events usually take place, it'll be a lot quieter this time, and athletes will be, you know, need to eat meals in the main dining area as quickly as possible, and alcohol might be banned there, and the families will probably not be able to come to Japan to watch them compete, so they don't have that usual support system. And so all of these restrictions could affect athletes' mental health. And, you know, they may feel isolated. That's why if you're working with someone in that situation, it's, even if you're working remotely by phone or Zoom, those Zoom calls or phone calls could be really valuable to them, just to feel like they can talk to somebody that they trust, they know, like, and trust, and that knows their situation. Because, you know, athletes are human. They need empathy, need understanding, and they need support to ease that sense of loneliness and to feel like there's somebody behind them. So, you know, at the Tokyo Olympics there'll be a clinic with services that include, you know, psychological counseling will be set up at the Olympics and the Paralympic Village. Some countries are taking extra steps to keep athletes in a healthy state of mind, like the British Olympic Association are sending a mental health expert team to support their athletes and staff. And you know, many countries are doing lots of different things. But I just wanted to give that background as some things that to be aware of that are in this pandemic Olympics is makes it different than other kinds of Olympics. And I think, you know, just like everyone around the world, the Summer Olympics and Paralympic athletes, initially, you know, when we found out about the COVID-19, experienced this uncertainty following the news of the virus outbreak, and there was so much uncertainty about whether the games would be postponed or canceled. Of course, they were postponed. And you know, that sense of loss, you know, many athletes to this day, they experience, you know, emotions like anger and frustration, denial, and maybe a sense of relief in some ways, sadness, a sense of helplessness, all these emotions. And a fear this time of, you know, how these Olympics are going to be different. But a huge sense of a loss of a tangible goal. Maybe they haven't been able to train the way they usually do. A loss of their peak form. And post-Olympic and post-Paralympic plans. You know, a loss of their focus and structure and connection, all these things they have had to deal with for the last year and a half. And then, you know, and then that sense of loss added by anxiety, the uncertainty of, you know, the whole global pandemic. And so some studies show that there's been a sharp rise in professional, for instance, with soccer players, reporting symptoms of generalized anxiety, 18% of women players and 16% of male players. And then with depression, 22% of women players, 13% of males. As a consequence of the coronavirus, the shutdown that they've had to experience in this past year. So that has taken a toll. And all the qualifications have had to be, you know, moved around. For instance, in track and field in the USA, the marathon Olympic trials had already taken place last year in 2020 in February. So the team was chosen, and then right in March was when the coronavirus was announced, it really hit, and then things were shut down. But they decided to keep that team, the team that was selected last year. So they knew for a whole year that they would still be able to compete on this new the Olympics in 2021. But all the other track athletes, they had not been able to do their Olympic trials. They were all shut down, because they would have their trials right before the Olympics, and then that was shut down. So they had to wait a whole year, and of course it just happened in Eugene, the USA Track and Field Championships, under the worst conditions possible with a heat wave where it hit 118 degrees in Portland, in Eugene, Oregon, or close to that, 115 degrees while they were competing. And so that was just totally change things as well. But the teams are now selected, and so you know, and it depends on what sport you're working with. Many individual team athletes, they respond differently in terms of their own motivational level, depending on whether they could easily train on their own, like marathoners, of course, can, and runners, or if they're largely dependent on training with their coaches and teammates for team sports. So it's different for each sport. And then there's, you know, younger athletes. Maybe they had an injury last year, and so they weren't able to compete, but they were happy because the postponement of the Olympics seemed like an opportunity. It gave them more time to prepare and put themselves in a better position for greater results in the games this year. So there's all that going on as well. It could be a loss or an opportunity, depending on where you're at. And then there's been challenges with sponsorships and end-of-year coaching contracts and academic program deferrals because of having to compete and not being able to compete in college programs and everything being put on hold. So, you know, all of that's been going on, of course, and then having to move your academic work online and homeschooling, or, you know, some athletes that have kids have been suddenly having to care for their kids and moving, and some athletes moving back home after years of living on their own, you know, all of that has been a huge change. So I just wanted to mentioned those things. And then there's other countries. You know, our country in USA has been doing so much better, but I know we have Anna L. in France is one of our performing edge coaches. You know, France has had lockdowns, many lockdowns, coming out of lockdown and then having to go back into lockdowns, and very frustrating for athletes there, I know, for Anna L. and athletes you're working with. And I know Dave up in Utah, working with people there, it's been more open. They've opened things up more. And June in Texas, and John in Nebraska, working with different kinds of athletes. And Junior working with horses. And, of course, that's more of an individual sport, so hopefully things have opened up more there. So there's all sorts of different sports. For other countries like Zimbabwe, there are limited medical facilities and support, and, you know, in addition to sports, food supplies have been difficult. You know, population, most people, 80% of people are unemployed prior with the lockdown, and just, you know, in a drought. And so a lot of countries are experiencing, you know, very difficult conditions. And then realizing that athletes worldwide have had more unstructured time on their hands than ever before. So that's been a difficult one that can lead to mental health issues as well. So now I just wanted to talk a bit about how to work with top athletes, with Olympians. As I mentioned, I've worked with the Olympians the last 7 Olympic Games. Some athletes have given me permission to use their names. Some are private. And I prefer most of the time just to talk about their sport. And so I can share with you lots of different situations. I just talk first about kind of the landscape. I think Olympic athletes realize that they're very sought out or selective about who they let into their support team. So it's good. It's important to realize that they're maybe skeptical sometimes about letting someone new in. But if you can become a trusted person through, you know, being, say, part of their, in their sport, then you can often get a chance to work with them because they're also vulnerable. They have the same human emotions as everyone else. And for instance, with a pole vaulter client, I was doing one way that you can find athletes to work with is to, if there's a local event, attract me, like find the sport that you are most familiar with, and you can then, you know, for instance, with myself, it was running and track and field. So Stanford was having a major track event here, and all the top athletes were coming here. So I thought, wow, this is great. I can go there and watch them. And so I was able to obtain a media pass. And you don't have to be a part of a major media organization. You can just have, it's easier than you think to obtain a media pass to attend events like that. You can say you're writing a book or it's for your blog, or you know, get to know the one of the coaches there, or, you know, knowing someone really helps to be able to get in. But and usually going to the website of the event, like the track meet, and looking there, it'll say media or publicity. And clicking there, and it'll say how to obtain a media pass, and you just click and fill out the form, and oftentimes you're able to get one that way. So I went to Stanford, the track meet, and I was able to go right down on the field. And after the athletes, you can go to the press conference beforehand to get to know athletes there, and also at the meet before while they're warming up. Talk with them there, and then afterward, right after they finish their event, usually athletes gather in one athlete area where they take off their shoes or change shoes and get water and food. And also, I was able to talk with my pole vaulter, the athlete there, and say I was writing a book and ask if she, if I could interview her for my book. And so we exchanged contact information. And then she said to me, you know, I'm feeling really concerned or worried about the upcoming Olympic trials and if I'm going to be able to do well. There's a lot of pressure on me. And so she asked if I could work with her. Because with the Olympics, it's a special situation. I think I like to be able to give back to the sport. And so I just offer to work with athletes complimentary with no charge. So oftentimes Olympic athletes don't have a lot of income. Anyway, they're just barely making it. So you can oftentimes be able to go and just, I think if you can offer to work with them for free, even for a few sessions, then it's really a valuable experience for you and for them. You can do a lot of good work with them. And then afterward, not beforehand, I'd say, but after you work with them and have some good results, you can, you know, ask if you could have a comment from them, a testimonial. It's never, you never want to say, I'll work with you in exchange for a testimonial. That's highly unethical, and you can get in trouble for that. So I would say, don't ever say it that way, a tit for tat, but just, you just work with them, and then afterward, it's a request that you, that if they could say a comment or something about it. Sometimes, and most of the time, I found athletes do, were willing to give a very nice comment about our work together. So that can help you with your credibility. So, that was one example of how I worked together with her, worked with her several weeks and months before the Olympics, the Olympic trials, and then she made it on the team, and then she asked me to come to Greece, to Athens there, and work with her there. Fortunately, I had a friend who I could get housing with there, and so I was able to work with her there leading up to the Olympics. And, you know, just a really valuable experience. And so then you're when you're working with someone like that, you're an insider, and you know you're able to really see what it's like from the inside out. And of course, you have to take care of your own accommodations and everything there yourself, so that they don't allow anyone in the Olympic to stay in the Olympic Village except the athletes. But you can do a lot of really good work there. So what you want to do is build trust early, and you know, let them know that you have something unique and that the mental part of training is good. You might just also just offer them something simple like making them a custom audio visualization, an MP3 file, a couple of those that are customized for them for them to be able to work with, and start with that. Sometimes, you know, the idea of coaching might seem like too much too soon, but if you can offer them visualization, audios, a couple of those, then that's a way to build a relationship, and then you can say that you can perhaps meet or talk on the phone or by Zoom to talk about how did that go and was that helpful for you and what issues are you working with now? And it can actually evolve into a coaching relationship there. So those are some things. I just wanted to start talking about how to work with athletes. And I've got a lot more to share with that. I want to be able to share more of it, of what we're talking about here on our next call on the next Thursday, fourth Thursday of the month, July the 22nd. It'll be at 9 a.m. Pacific, here, the same time as here, and talk more about, you know, how to work with the athletes, what they're going through, and the kinds of things that you want to focus on with them, how to get started with your athletes, and how to do your research first. The pacing is different with high-level athletes, that they might only have, you know, at first 15 minutes to give you. They're really busy, and so you want to get to the point, and not much time, rapport building, that kind of thing. And there might be a lot of time gaps as they're traveling a lot. There's not a lot of, they don't have a regular schedule. And so fortunately we have Zoom now that everyone knows how to use. So you can use that in other countries. So I have lots of different things that I want to share with you about this, and also how to get a really good testimonial and then top mistakes to avoid with your athletes. If you like, if you have questions, email me your questions for next time for the 22nd. I want to thank you for listening this time, and we'll get into more of the nitty-gritty of how I work with athletes, how you can work with Olympians and top athletes next time as well. So I'll have this audio up on the website shortly, and I'll send it to you by email or replay here. And if you want to, if you have any comments, you can just send them by email. And as we look forward to the Olympics coming up here, we'll look forward to more specifics about how you can work with Olympians, and I'll share with you more of my specific experiences there. Because, it'll be a very unique Olympics with this pandemic going on as well. So thank you for attending today. Thank you for joining. And we'll talk more in 2 weeks, and I'll send you the audio shortly here. And our next call will be July the 22nd, the day before the Olympics start. So we look forward to talking with you then, too. Thanks. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you shortly. Thanks. Bye now.